Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Chav Beis. We are starting today on Chav Alpam Beis, the Torah's bottom of the Amud. We're starting with the words Amar Marzucha. The Gemara now is going to be discussing somewhat of a tangent from what we were discussing yesterday, and that is the script in which the Torah is written in. Just as a brief introduction, whenever you look at a Sefer Torah, so there's a certain way that the Torah is written. It's the script of the letters, and we refer to that as Ksav Ashuris. Ksav Ashuris, the Gemara later on is going to have a discussion in terms of where exactly the etymology of the word Ashuris comes from, but we describe it as Ksav Ashuris. There is another way to write the Hebrew language, meaning same letters, same pronunciation, but a different lettering, a different script, and it's called Ksav Ivri. Ksav Ivri, probably most of us are not familiar with it. We've never actually seen it before. You can look it up. In the academic world, they refer to it as the Phoenician script. So the Ksav Ivri is another way to write it. The Gemara is going to here have a discussion in terms of when the Torah was given to us, was it written with Ksav Ashuris, the one we're used to seeing, or was it written with Ksav Ivri? There is going to be an opinion, as you'll see later on, and just a couple of minutes from now, that the Torah was actually given in Ksav Ivri. So it's a very interesting position to take. It's a very difficult position to take. In fact, later on, the Gemara is going to have a number of opinions that do not subscribe to that. And the Rishonim also are very bothered by that position that the original Torah and the Luchos were given in Ksav Ivri. In fact, later on, I'll present the basic reason why it's a very difficult position to take. But anyway, that is what the Gemara is discussing. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about right now, only because at the end of the discussion, the Gemara is going to be talking about the king in the Sefer Torah of the king. Does the Gemara come up with the discussion over here? But it is a bit of a tangent. We are starting in the Gemara, Amar Mezutra V'yitem Amar Ukva. B'tchil Nina Torah L'Yisrael, when the Torah was originally given to the Jewish people, B'ksav Ivri, V'loshon HaKodesh. So it was given in Ksav Ivri, which means that the script was in the Ivri script, but the Lashon HaKodesh was given in the in Hebrew. Chaz v'nitna lahem b'mei Ezra. And once we get to the time of Ezra, Ezra historically we know is about 1,000 years later, right? From the time the Torah was given, 3,300 years ago. Then we had, I'm just ballparking everything over here, we had 40 years of the desert, another 400 years upon entrance into the land of Israel. Then, without the Beis HaMikdash, then another 400 years with the Beis HaMikdash, then 70 years of exile, and then we get to Ezra. So so we are looking at, again, just a ballpark, we're looking at approximately 1,000 years later. So when Ezra, once again, presented the Torah to the Jewish people, Biksav Ashuris V'Lashon Arami. So he gave it in the Ashuris script, meaning the one that we're used to looking at, and he gave it in the Aramaic language. So Biran L'Yisrael Ksav Ashuris V'Lashon HaKodesh. And as far as what we chose, we ended up choosing the Ashuris script and Lashon HaKodesh. V'hinichu Lehajotu Ksav Ivri V'Lashon Arami. And as far as what happened to the other language and the other way that the Torah was written, the other script. So that was left to the Hejotos, my Hejotos. The Gemara immediately wants to know who we're making reference to. Amar Chista Kusai. We're talking about the Kusim, the Samaritans. So they're the ones who were relegated to the Aramaic language and the Ksav Ivri. But we chose for ourselves the Hebrew language and the Ksav Ashuris. So my Ksav Ivri, so Amar Rav Chista Ksav Libuna. So the Gemara, obviously, would be a lot easier if the Gemara just gave us what the characters look like, but the Gemara just gives us a two-word description of what Ksav Ivri is. The Gemara just simply describes it as Ksav Libuna. Very unclear exactly what the Gemara means by that. Take a look at Rashi on the bottom of the Amud, on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, the last Rashi on the Amud. So Rashi writes, Osios Gedolos Kenosan Chikosvim B'Kmeos and Mezuzos. So Rashi describes them as big letters, which are written on the Kmeos and Mezuzos. Kmeos are the amulets that they wore in Mezuzos. Now Rashi over here, when he says Mezuzah, probably is not referring to the Mezuzos in the formal sense, meaning the Mezuzos Beis Secha, because the whole point over here is that they were relegated to being written for mundane purposes. So mezuzah over here in Rashi most probably means that it was just letters written on the door. But anyway, that is Rashi's description of Libuna. It doesn't, even from Rashi, it's not even clear what the word Libuna has to do with the fact that they're Osios Gedolos. They're big letters. But in any event, If you want to see more on Ksav Libun, you can take a look at the Tosus over here, who also discusses it. But anyway, so the Gemara now has presented an opinion, which is said over in the name of Mar Zutra and in the name of Mar Ukva, that when the Torah was given, it was originally given Ksav Ivri. The Gemara now is going to quote a Braisa that's going to be discussing this very matter as well. Tanya will learn the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi, Omer Rai, Haya, Ezra, Shi, Tina, Sein Torah, Al Yadoli Yisrael. Ezra was of such a spiritual height and such a level that really it would have been worthy had the Torah been given to us through Ezra Hanavi. Elema Kadma Moshe, but of course there's the very not so small detail that Moshe predated him. And so Moshe had the historical advantage of coming first. So Moshe was the one who gave us the Torah, but the truth be told is that the Torah could have been given to us by Ezra. But Moshe Hu Omer, Moshe Allah El Halokim, by Moshe the Pasuk says that he went up to Hashem. But Ezra Hu Omer Hu Ezra Allah Mi Bavel, Ezra came up from Bavel, Ma Aliyah Mura Kan Torah, Af Aliyah Mura Lahalan Torah. Just like by Aliyah, when it refers to Moshe, it's a reference to Torah. So too by Ezra, it also is a reference to Torah. Kemoshe Hu Omer, sorry. So by Moshe, the Pasuk describes how he taught us the commandments. So same idea by Ezra. He also was the teacher of Torah. So really, in a principle level, on a fundamental level, the Torah should have been given to us through Ezra. But again, Moshe came about 1,000 years earlier. So, but in the very least, however, the one thing that did come about through Ezra is that the Ksav was changed. The actual script of the letters changed. So, and how do I know this? We now turn to the top of Chav Beis Amud Aleph. So the Gemara is now going to be quoting Psukim from Ezra. Uksav hanishtavan kasuv aramis umiturgam aramis. So the writing was changed. It was changed and written in Aramaic and also articulated in Aramaic as well. Uksiv, and we're going to be taking a look at another pasuk as well. Locha hank savala mikra upshari lahoda lamalka. Now this is a reference to the suda that was made by Belshazzar. So before we go to the before I explain this pasuk, so let's just take a little bit of background over here so we understand the suda of Belshazzar. We know that the first temple lasted for 410 years and was destroyed by the Babylonians. The Babylonian Empire was recently new when it destroyed the Bais Rishon, when it destroyed the first temple. And the Babylonian Empire was made up of three Babylonian rulers. This the rulers and the years that I'm presenting right now was based on the Gemara Megillah on Daf Yud Yud Aleph. So the Gemara over there describes how there were three Babylonian rulers. The first one, which obviously has the most notable because he's the one who destroyed the first Beit HaMikdash, was Nebuchadnezzar. He lasted for 45 years. The next one was his son Evil-Merodech, lasting another 23 years. And the last one was Belshazzar, presumably the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, and he lasted for only but 3 years. If you take those years together, 45 plus 23 plus 3, so you get to the number 71. The Gemara in Megillah points out that Belshazzar, in the 71st year, since his grandfather assumed the Babylonian Empire, so Belshazzar was then hoping that the Babylonian rule would come to a end. That the Jewish rule would come to an end. And the reason why they assumed that is because there was a Nevo that was touted about by Daniel and others as well, that the exile was only going to last for 7 years. So once you get to the 71st year, so that brought about the thinking amongst the Babylonians that the Jewish empire would come to a total end and there would be no return back into Eretz Yisrael. So Belshazzar, in the third year of his rule, which was year 71 of the Babylonian Empire, so he made a big feast. In this feast, out appeared out of nowhere a hand, and the hand, a disembodied hand, and the hand started writing something on the wall, a message. And no one was able to read the message. They called in Daniel, who at that point in time already was an older man. They called in Daniel. They asked him to read the handwriting on the wall. By the way, the expression, the handwriting on the wall, comes exactly from here. And Daniel reads and interprets the handwriting on the wall. And the message had to do with the fact that the Babylon Empire was going to be destroyed and a new empire was going to come about. And that, of course, is the Persian Empire. With all that stated, that I said that all by way of background, and now the Gemara over here quotes the Pasuk. This Pasuk is from Daniel, from the fifth parak of Daniel, and the Pasuk reads, Lo chahalahen ksava lemikro upashe lohoda lemalka. Regarding the Suda that took place during Belshazzar, nobody was able to read the writing, and no one was able to understand it. Uksiv, and then the Gemara quotes another Pasuk, and this pasuk too also is in reference to the writing. Uksiv b'kasuf is mishnah atara zos. Now this is regarding this is in Parsha Shoftim. This is regarding the king and its sefer Torah. But what the Gemara is now doing is taking a new take on this pasuk. And when the Torah says mishnah, what the Torah means by that is that it went through a change from the word shinui ksav haror lishanos. And what's meant by that is that the writing is subject to a change, meaning that the letters are subject to change. And so what the Gemara is doing is it's explaining that the letters went from Ivri, and it changed into Ashuris. So, like we saw previously in the Gemara, the original writing of the Sefer Torah was in Ivri, and then it was changed to Ashuris. And this provides for us a very simple explanation in terms of why nobody was able to decipher the writing on the wall. Because it was, quote-unquote, in new writing, meaning it was no longer in Ksav Ivri, the original lettering of the Torah, but now it's in Ksav Ashuris. Lama nikra Ashuris, the Gemara now wants to know, why is Ksav Ashuris called Ashuris? Sha'ala imah may usher, because it came with them from Assyria. Assyria was the kingdom to the north of the Jewish people, probably what we would refer to as modern day Assyria. And it was called Ashuris because it came from the neighboring Assyria. And this is, again, an explanation in terms of why it is that nobody was able to interpret and decipher it, because it was, quote-unquote, a new writing. Okay, so ad kan, so this takes us now to the first opinion of the Braisa, which basically is of the opinion that the Torah was originally presented to us in Ivri, and then later changed to Ashuris, and the change took place during the times of Ezra, meaning the beginning of the Second Temple. Tanya. Gemara quotes the Braisa, Rabbi Omer B'tchila B'ksav Zenin Torah Yisrael. The Torah was given to us in the original Ashuris lettering. Kevin Shechatu Nefach Lam L'Rodz. But once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so the lettering now became unused. The Gemara uses the word ro'et. So Rashi says, like from the words tirats oyev, like the enemy was destroyed, meaning that we forgot it. We forgot the Ashuris writing. And kevan shechazru bahem hechzir lahem. But when Daniel and Ezra brought us back, so hechziru lahem, so we were able to relearn the Ashuris writing. Shenem Ashuva libitzaron Asira hatikva. Gam hayom magid mishnah shivlach. And I'm going to return to you what you want at. So, according to this opinion, Ashuris was actually the original lettering that we used to write the Sefer Torah, temporarily forgotten, and then Daniel and Ezra, so to say, brought it back. Lamani Krashma Ashuris Shema Meusheris Biksav, because it is the beautiful and the best of all the writings. Rabbi Shema Ben Lazar, Rabbi Shema Rabbi Lazar Ben Parchasham, Rabbi Shema Rabbi Lazar Madai. And now the Gemara is going to be quoting another opinion, which is Ksav Zel and Nishana Kol Iker, that it never went through any change whatsoever. The letter that we look at, the Sifrei Torah, now are the same letters that were given to us all the way back to Mount Har Sinai. Shenamar Vavei Adamim, I'm sorry, Vavei Ha Amudim lo nishana, af vavim lo nishana. Just like the pillars themselves have not gone through any change, so too the vavim, meaning vavim over here in the Torah means hooks. But in this context over here, it's not a reference to the hooks, it means the actual vavim themselves, meaning the letter vav, also did not undergo any type of change. The Omer, and also Miguel Sester, it describes the Jewish people having a letter in a language. Just like the language has not changed, meaning we have always spoken Hebrew, so too the lettering themselves have not changed as well. And then what are we going to do with the pasuk that describes how the Torah underwent through a change? So the Gemara says, no, shtei Torahs. The word Mishnah over there does not mean change. The word Mishnah over there means two, double, repeated. Meaning, then this goes back to yesterday's daf. Just like we learned yesterday's daf, that the king went around with two Sifrei Torah. That's what the Torah meant. That's what the Torah meant when it said the word Mishnah. So basically now we have three opinions amongst the Tanayim. One opinion is that the Torah was given in Ivri, and in Ksav Ivri, and then during the days of Daniel and Ezra, changed over to Ksav Ashuris, and that is going to provide a simple explanation in terms of why it is the handwriting was written on the wall at the Seuda Belshazzar, but we weren't able to recognize it because it was quote-unquote new writing to us. We didn't recognize it. All we knew was Ksav Ivri. The second opinion is that, no, the Torah was originally given to Ksav Ashuris. After destruction of the first base of Mikdash, we forgot the Ksav Ashuris. We flipped over to Ksav Ivri. And then when Daniel and Ezra came back, they reinstated the Ksav Ashuris. But this too would also give us another simple explanation in terms of why no one was able to interpret the writing on the wall, because the writing on the wall was Ksav Ashuris, and at that point in time it was already forgotten. And then there's a third opinion, which the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Elazar Modai, which is that there was no change, never any change. The lettering that we use now is the same lettering that was back then, and it never underwent any change whatsoever. According to this opinion, we're still going to now have to consider why it is that we were unable to recognize the handwriting on the wall when everyone knew the lettering. That the Gemara is going to ask in just a little bit, and the Gemara is going to respond to that question. V'idach, now the Gemara is just now covering all the bases. What if you are of the opinions, meaning Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi? So, hi Shivisi, my darshbe. What are you going to do with the word with the pasuk of Shivisi? It does not have to do with the king. It does not have to do with his Mishnah Torah. So the Gemara goes on to explain. Homi by lechid Rav Chana bar Bizna, damer Rav Chana bar Bizna, Rabbi Shimon, chasida mispal tzarich shira atzmo ki ilu shchina kenegdo. When you daven, you have to view yourself as if the shchina is opposite you. Shenemer Shivisi Hashem lenegdi samid. So that is what we're going to do with the pasuk, having nothing to do with the king and the and the second Sefer Torah, but it has to do with our the way we perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or we should try to perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu while we're davening, being focused on being lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, the Gemara quoted the opinion of Rav Elazar Modai, who says that the Ksav never changed. And if that's true, so the Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Ksav Zelon Ishtana, so according to Rabbi Shimon, meaning we had it brought to us in the name of Rav Elazar Modai, but it was also Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Ksav Zelon Ishtana, they never went through any change whatsoever. Milo Kahalin Ksav Alamikre. So first of all, we go back to a pasuk that we quoted from Daniel, which is that no one was able to recognize it. The king was and his conciliars, they weren't able to recognize the writing. Why not? And so Amar Rabbi Gamachi Echtev Lahon. So the Gemara is going to give a number of suggestions in terms of why it is that we were not able to read it, even though we were familiar with the lettering. And I say we, I mean, you know, Belshazzar in his court. So one is that it was written Bigamatra. Now the word Gamatra usually is a reference to attaching numeric values to the letters and coming up with levels of interpretation based on that. But over here, Gamatra just simply means that the letters were jumbled up. There are various ways to jumble up letters of the Torah. The Gemara over here is using a method of what's called Atbash. Atbash is that for an Aleph, you'll substitute it with the last letter of Tav. For a Beis, you'll substitute it with a Shin, etc., etc. So that's the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, so that makes for 11 substitutions. Anyway, so yatat yatat idach pugach mat. So the Gemara here gives us, these are not words, these are just simply letters, but if you decode them using the method of Atbash, so what you're going to get to are the words mana mana tikal uparsin. And the Gemara goes on to explain, my parish lahu, what does it mean? Mana mana tikal parsin. So it comes out to the words, again, decoding through Atbash of mana mana tikal parsin. The Gemara goes on to explain, what is the meaning of this message, mina? So the Gemara goes on to quote Psukim. Minei ala machuzcha. So God counted your kingdom. And I'm sorry, tikal and takalta bemoznai vihistachta chasir. And he, the word takalta from the word takal, which means shekel to weigh, and Kadosh Baruch Hu weighed on the scales. And he found that you were missing. You're a chaser. I'm sorry, parson. And the last word of the message is parson comes from the words, it's actually a double entendre. Priestess machuscha, your kingdom is now going to break up, meaning the word pros means to break. When we take bread and we break bread, it's called prusa. So prosa machuscha, your kingdom is going to be broken up. And it's going to be given to the kingdoms of Madai Faras. It was a the next empire that ruled after the Babylonians was a combination of two empires. It was Paras and Madai. You look at the Megillah. In the Megillah, they always refer to it as Paras and Madai. Actually, the last time it's mentioned in the Megillah, it's actually Madai Faras. But anyway, so the so that was the message written on the wall, and with a little bit of decoding that was done by Daniel, so that's what it meant. Shmuel Amar, now the Gemara is going to give just a couple of other opinions in terms of how exactly it was encrypted, encoded on the wall, and why it is that no one was able to read it. So according to Shmuel, these are not words, these are just letters. Mamatos Nanakfe Alavran. So in other words, these letters were written horizontally, and then what you do is if you were to write these three words one on top of another, and then take a vertical look at the first three letters of each of the words, so it would be mana. You take a look at another vertical look at the next three letters, so it would be mana. And the next one would be takal, and then you take the next two vertical columns, and it would be uparsin. Okay, so again, just another way to decode it. Rav Yochanan Amar, anam lakat nisrapu. Basically, it's just each one of the words written backwards. And Rav Ashi Amar, namanama katal poor sin. It is basically the words, but with the first two letters flipped and switched over. Okay, a quick conclusion to the discussion of the lettering of the Sefer Torah, whether or not it was originally written in Ksav Ivri, then flipped over to Ksav Ashuri, or two, it was originally written in Ksav Ashuri, we forgot Ksav Ashuri, went over to Ksav Ivri, and then went back to Ksav Ashuri, and that's what Ezra reintroduced us to, or three, the letters never went through any change whatsoever. I mentioned earlier, the first position is the most difficult position to defend. Obviously, you know, it's a mitzvah to defend it, but it's a very difficult position to defend. Notably, the Gemara in Megillah, in the very beginning of the Masechta over there, has a discussion of the Luchos. The Luchos were engraved, the letters of the Luchos were engraved, and cut all the way through the Luchos. The Luchos were written on stone, and the letters were engraved, and the Gemara goes on to describe over there that the Mem Sofis and the Samach were B'nai Somdim, that they stood in a miracle, meaning that they are circular letters, totally closed, and the only way that the middle of the letters were able to suspend themselves in midair is only through a nace, only through a miracle. So clearly over there, the Gemara is describing what kind of lettering. So Ksav Ashuris is clearly describing the lettering of Ksav Ashuris, not Ksav Ivri. Now, if you take a look at Ksav Ivri, again, you can Google it, you can look it up. If you take a look at Ksav Ivri, and you'll take a look at what the Samach looks like and what the Mem Sofis looks like, so it's not a closed letter, and it doesn't need to stand B'nais if they were carved out. So the Gemara Megillah over there takes a very strong position that the lettering over there was Ksav Ashuri, the way we're looking at it nowadays. Also, what complicates the matter even further is that if you look at the Gemara over there in Megillah, so the author of that statement was Rav Chista. The same Rav Chista over here that tells us that the letters were originally written in Ksav Ivri. Okay, this obviously makes for complications and discussion. If you want to see more on this topic, so there is a Ritva in the beginning of Masechta Megillah who discusses this at length and discusses this issue at length. So that would be a good primary source to look at in terms of a discussion of Ksav Ivri versus Ksav Ashuri. Okay, we're going to continue in the Gemara. Now we are on Chav Beis Amin Aleph. We're on the Mishnah. And the Mishnah continues, in Rochvan al-Susa, one is not allowed to ride on the king's horse. And Yoshvan al-Kisa, you're not allowed to sit on his throne. Vein Misham Shen Bershavito, you can't use his scepter. Vein Rohan al-Sokishu Mistapir, when he's getting a haircut, no one's allowed to look at him while getting a haircut. Velo Kishu Aron, Velo Kishu Bebes Amerchot, neither when he's naked, nor when he's in the bathhouse. Shenemar, Sumtas Himalach HaMelech, Shetehem Ascha Alecha. A theme that we keep hitting again and again in the second parak of Sanhedrin is that we have to have awe and respect for the king. And part of that awe and respect to the king is that we we always have to see the king in his best position and never in any kind of compromised position. The Gemara starts off with a discussion. Amar Rav Yaakov, Amar Rav Yochanan, Avishag muteres l'shlomo v'asuris la'adonia. Avishag would be permitted to Shlomo, but would be prohibited to Adonia. The Avishag was the last of the wives of David HaMelech, but as we're going to see in just a moment, or if you know the Navi, you'll know this already, he's not actual wife to David HaMelech. He was a Sochenes. She was a Sochenes. She provided warmth for David HaMelech. She served David HaMelech, but they were not intimate with one another. And so what the Gemara is describing over here is that she, Avishag, would be permitted to Shlomo, but she would be prohibited to Adonia. Shlomo and Adonia are two sons of David HaMelech. Shlomo ended up becoming the successor. Adonia did not become the successor, although Adonia at one point in time did want to become the successor. In fact, just in yesterday's daf, we talked about how the soldiers of Adonia were extraordinarily gifted athletes. Anyway, the Gemara over here goes on to explain. So she, Avishag, was permitted to Shlomo because he was a king. And a king is allowed to use another scepter of the king. Now, the Gemara over here is describing Avishag as a scepter, not trying to objectify her, but just simply pointing out that she wasn't a formal wife of David HaMelech, so you can't call her Ashes HaMelech. So over here, just for lack of better term, so the Gemara describes as a Sharvit, meaning that she served the king. So therefore, only another king would be able to be Mishtamish. But Asur L'Adonia Dehejotu. But on the other hand, Adonia was a commoner, so therefore he was not able to make use of the quote-unquote the Sharvit, in this case Avishag. Now the Gemara gives us a little bit of background information over Avishag Maihi. What was the relationship of Avishag to David HaMelech? So the Gemara quotes a pasuk. V'amelech David Zakim Babi Yamim. And V'yom Allah Avadav Yivakshu. The Gemara here is just quoting a series of quick excerpts from the Pesukim to get us familiar with the basic idea. V'ksiv V'yivakshu Narayafa. V'ksiv V'narayafa Adma V'tila So through the psukim that the Gemara quote, basically David in his old age was cold, he couldn't get warmed up, so Avishag was provided to him, was given to him as a way of warming him up. The Amra, now, we'll be very clear. It's very clear in the Pesukim, and the Gemara is going to be very clear about this as well, is that Avishag did not marry David, and they did not have an intimate relationship. So Amra, Nis Nin Sabain. So Avishag said, well, it's a little bit strange that I'm here and we have physical contact with one another, but we're not intimate with one another. So she made what would seem to be a reasonable suggestion, that is, let's get married. So Amar Allah, so David says to her, Asirali, no, I can't marry you. And the reason why I can't marry her is because he already has 18 wives. And as we learned in yesterday's daf, a king cannot have more than 18 wives. Amar Le Chasol Le Ganava Navshe Le Shlama Nakit. So she makes a comment with, which at first glance seems a little bit disrespectful, but she says, look, when the Ganav doesn't have any victims, so basically he says, now Shamanakit, yeah, I'm good, meaning I've reformed, I'm no longer a Ganav, but meanwhile it's just simply as a function of the fact that he can't do it anymore. So basically what she was accusing David HaMelech of is that the reason why he is saying no to the marriage proposal is because he's old and he just simply can't be intimate anymore. That's what she is accusing David HaMelech. So Amar Lahu, so David turns around and he says to all of his attendants, Kirli Bula Batsheva. So he demands that Batsheva be called out. Uksiv Tava Batsheva LaMelech HaChadara. And Batsheva and David HaMelech go to the room. Amar Rav Yehuda Merav. So Ba'oso Sha'a Kincha Batsheva B'Shosh Shosh Re'Mapos. So David HaMelech and Batsheva had relations. The Gemara says here 13 times. How did the Gemara get to that number? I take a look at Rashi for a suggestion in terms of how that is. But anyway, the point being is that David HaMelech wanted to make very clear that this was not have anything to do with his ability or inability. This is just simply a function of the fact that no, to him it was Usser, and since it was Usser to him, so therefore it became quite clear. It became quite clear that the that the only consideration as far as he was concerned was just simply the Issa. Amar of Shemar Barba Bore Kamakash and Gerushin. So the Gemara over here now makes an observation, and that is, you know, there would have been another solution to the whole problem, and that would have been is that David HaMelech had 18 wives, so he Avishag was another possible candidate, in fact a very good candidate. She was the one who actually warmed him up, but David HaMelech said no. Now the Gemara just simply says as a proposed solution, why not have David just simply divorce one of his wives, and therefore he can now marry Avishag. So the Gemara says the reason why is because this is such a drastic solution. And the Gemara now is making exactly this comment. Borei kamakashin gerushin, sherei David HaMelech hitir lo liyachid. Look at how gerushin, how difficult gerushin is, because David HaMelech, who they allowed him to seclude himself with Avishag, now as we learned just in yesterday's daf, seclusion between a man and an unmarried woman is an Issa d'Rabbanan, and yet the Chachamim felt that they were going to permit that, v'lo itir lo legarish, rather than him just simply divorce one of his wives. So you see that rather than divorcing one of his wives, so the Chachamim gave a special dispensation, albeit it is an Issa d'Rabbanan, it's not an Issa min haTorah, but the Chachamim still gave him the dispensation, an Issa d'Rabbanan, rather than him having to divorce one of his wives. And the Gemara here comments now on the tragedy of divorce. Amar Rabbi Elazar kol hamagarish es ishto rishona. Anyone who divorces his first wife, afilu mizbech marida lav demos, the mizbech is crying. Shenemar v'zo shenis tasu k'sus demos mizbech Hashem bechi ve'enaka. The pasuk in Malachi gives this kind of imagery that is as if the mizbech itself is shedding tears as a result of the loss. Me'ein od penos alam incha v'lakachav v'tzom yadchem. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want the offerings anymore. Uksiv amartem ama alki Hashem heid bincha v'ein eishes nurecha. And the pasuk says very clearly, it has to do with the fact that you no longer want to be with the wife of your youth. Asher ata bagarata ba, the one that you rebelled against her. V'hi chaverecha v'eshes brisecha, she was your friend, you made a covenant with her, and yet you divorced her. And so the Pasuk of Malachi, it's not even much of a drush, it's pretty straightforward. The Pasuk of Malachi describes how this shakes the world, it rocks the world, and it affects even to the point where the Mizbech, which obviously is an inanimate object, but it reacts to it as well. I mean, kaviyachol, again, this is just a powerful image in terms of the nature of such a tragedy. The Gemara over here, I'm going to say over the Pshat, based on Rashi elsewhere, Rashi and Zvachim, the Gemara says that a person is going to have his wife taken away from him, meaning she's going to die because somebody asks for money and he doesn't have it. Now, what the way Rashi understands this, Rashi understands this in Zvachim, that what it means is that the husband was a bit of a thief, and then when they went over to him and they said to him, okay, give us our money, so he says, what are you talking about? I don't have your money. Well, meaning, I never took it or already paid it, whatever the case is. In other words, but basically, he's a thief and he's denying that he owes the money. So based on his actions, so his wife is going to die. When people ask you for it and you say you don't have it, so your mishkavach is going to be taken away from you, and this is understood as a context to a wife. And so the Gemara says quite powerfully over here that a person's wife dies on as a result of his sins. Rav Yochanan kol adam shemesa ishto rishona. Any person where the wife dies first is so devastating, so tragic, that it's like the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in his day. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yechezkel. So I'm going to take away your wife. You're not going to be able to eulogize or cry for her or shed any tears. And as Yechezkel was now speaking to the nation, he says that my wife died in the previous night. And as a way of communicating a very, very powerful message, and Yechezkel, what kind of cost this was for Yechezkel in order to be able to communicate this message. So just like this was a personal tragedy for me, the Jewish people are going to be suffering a national tragedy, and they're going to be losing the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says that you see that there's an equivalency between the loss of one's wife and the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Amar Rabbi Alexander called Adam Shem Mesa Ishto Biyamav Ola Choshech Ba'ado. A person who loses his wife is in darkness. Shenemar Or Choshech Ba'ado. lo v'nero alav yid ach. Rav Yosi Rabbi Chanan Amar psiosav mit katrot. Your steps get even shorter. Shenemar yasrut sa'ado, oh no. Rabbi Abao Amar atzasono fellas. Your advice is no longer going to be good. You won't have good counsel, but rather you're going to be a poor counsel. Shenemar v'tashlicheil atzaso. Your advice is going to go down. So all these things happen to a person when he loses his wife. Amar Rabbi Abao Amar Chanan Amar Rabbi Yochanan Kashal is vugim kikriyas yamsof. Gemara is in the beginning of the Sota. The Gemara is here as well. That the shidduch between a man and his woman is as difficult as kriyas yamsof. It's unnatural. It's unnatural for water to part. It's unnatural for people to get together and find one another. Shenemar Elokim Oshiv Yechidim Beisa. Kadosh Baruch Hu takes individuals and makes a house of them. Motzi Asrim Be Kosharos. He releases the prisoners. We're going to skip the parentheses. Al tikre b'kosharos ella b'chi v'shiros. And the Gemara is darshining over here that kosharos is to be understood as a contraction of the words b'chi v'shiros, crying and singing. Where do we have in this situation historically where crying and singing occurred simultaneously? That's kriyas yamsof. The Egyptians cried, the Jews sang, and so we have b'chi v'shiros, and that is analogous to a Kadosh Baruch Hu making zivugim. The Gemara says, "Zini, now is this really true?" V'amar Rav Yehuda Marav. Arbam Yom Kodem Yitzirus Avad, 40 days before 40 days after conception, Baskol Yotzes V'Amras Bas Ponu Laponi, Kadosh Baruch Hu decides who's going to be marrying whom. So Lokashia HaBezivik Rishon HaBezivik Sheni. So the Gemara answers, same Gemara in Sota, same Gemara here, is that for Zivik Rishon, so there is some sort of ideal match, what we would refer to as a Basharet, so that was established, but then after Zivik Rishon, then for Zivik Sheni. So then basically you're, quote unquote, you're on your own, and it's difficult for a Kadosh Baruch Hu, just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu was able to be Koriyam, so Kadosh Baruch Hu can also create Zivugim as well. Obviously, this idea that something is difficult for Kadosh Baruch Hu is quite frankly difficult for us to understand. There's nothing difficult for Kadosh Baruch Hu, but the idea is that when Kadosh Baruch Hu set the world into order following natural law, so Kadosh Baruch Hu does not like to break natural law. So anytime natural law needs to be broken, it's considered what the Gemara describes as being kashal Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's difficult for Hashem. So over here also, people tend to like to be alone. It's hard for people to live together. But okay, that's what makes shidduchim so hard. Okay, and the Gemara over here obviously is discussed extensively. You'll probably hear this Gemara quoted once or twice at Sheva Brachos. Anyway, back to the Gemara. Amar Bishmal Bar Nachman L'chol Yishmer Chutz Meishes Neurim. Everything has got a substitute with exception to your wife of your youth. Shenemar Ve'eshes Neurim Kisim Ma'es. The wife of your youth, can you just simply dismiss or dispense with her? In other words, it's a rhetorical question. The answer is you cannot. Person can only find real comfort and real companionship with his first wife. Amar lo, Rav Yitzchak, who heard this and it was taught to him by his very own father, Kigon Ma. So he says, can you give me an example of what you mean by that? Amar lo, Kigon Imcha. What do you mean? Your mother. Your mother's a wonderful example of that. So Rav Yehuda basically pointed to his wife as an example of somebody who is considered a true companion. Ini the Gemara says, but wait a second. But at the same time, when Rav Yehuda was teaching Rav Yitzchak another pasuk, which is Umotzi ani mar mimavetz es isha asher hi mitzudim v'charamim. So the pasuk in Mishle describes the. Koalas. The pasuk in Koalas describes the only thing I found worse than death is a woman who basically traps a man. Va'amar lo kegoman, and then Rav Yitzchak turns to his father and says, "Can you give me an example of such an individual?" Va'amar lo kegonimcha. What do you mean, your mother? Your mother's an example of that. So over here, Rav Yehuda now is describing presumably the same woman. I mean, it's Rav Yitzchak's mother, so it is the same woman as both being his true companion, his like real b'sharon in life, and at the same time, he also describes her as being mar mimavas. So how can they both be true? Though the Gemara answers, they both absolutely can be true. Midkaf tkife is on one hand, she was a strong woman and she was tough, and on the other hand, iburi ma'avra b'mila. But at the same time, she was also she was ma'avir al midosa. That's the way Rashi describes it. Basically, she was also very forgiving. So she was both. And so Rav Yehuda had no problem describing his wife in both of those regards. Okay. Amar Shmuel Bar Unya Mishum Derav. The Gemara quotes another statement in the name of Rav. Isha Golem. He. A woman is considered Golem. Rashi describes it as being unfinished. In fact, the Rashi, the third Rashi, second line down, Kli Shelo Nigmar Kari Golem. Any Kli that is unfinished is referred to as a Golem. Kedinan Gomei Kli Eitz Tameim. We're probably more familiar with the Golem in terms of the that which the Maharal made or reported to have been made by the Maharal. But anyway, but the idea behind a golem is that it's an unfinished product. And the Gemara here describes a woman before she's married and before she has her first time of having relations, she's considered a golem. The Eino Koresus Bris Ella Lamisha Asakli. And the one that finishes her, meaning when the husband marries her and has relations with her the first time, so it's considered as if the husband has now finished her, she's now finished product, and the husband is the one who is considered the one who fashions her. And the Gemara over here quotes the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, says it's very straightforward, that when a husband marries a woman, so he's Osayach, he actually makes her. So Tana ain ish meis el lishto, vein isha meis el labala. The one who feels the death of a woman the most is her husband, and vice versa. The one who feels the death of her husband the most is his wife. Ein ish meis el lisho shenema v'yamasek lemelch ish na'ami. Eli Melech died, and he was the husband of Na'ami. Na'ami felt the worst. Vein isha meis el labala shenema v'ani bavoi mipadan meis alai. Rachel Yaakov describes how Rachel died to him, meaning again, he felt it the most. Ein Rowan Osa. We're back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that no one can take a look at the king while he gets a haircut on a Rabbanon. The Gemara quotes a Brisa in terms of frequency of haircuts. Malach Mestaper Bechol Yom, a king gets a haircut every day. Kohen Gadol Meir Shabbos, Meir Shabbos Kohen Gadol gets a haircut once a week. Kohen Hejot Echad L'Shloshim Yom Kohen, a regular Kohen gets a haircut once every 30 days. Malach Mestaper Bechol Yom, the king gets a haircut every single day. Shemar Melch Biyafio Techazene Necha. King always has to have the best appearance and look the best, and therefore he'll get a haircut every day. Kohen Gadol Meir of Shabbos, Amar of Shmuel Bar Nachman, Amar of Yochanan Hol Mishamos Mischachos. And the Gemara's explanation over here is very straightforward. We know that the Kohanim operate in the Beis Hamikdash on a system of 24 mishmaros. They're going to be working weekly in the Beis Hamikdash, meaning, and that the shifts change at the end of every week. So when the Kohen Gadol is going to be looking at the new Mishmar coming in. New Mishmar is coming in on Friday, so he has to look presentable. So therefore, he's going to be getting a haircut, presumably on Thursday, so that when the new Mishmar comes in and sees the Kohen Gadol, they'll see a put-together Kohen Gadol. And then Kohen Hedjot, L'Shoshim Yom, Kohen Hedjot gets a haircut every 30 days. Yechziv, V'Rashom, Lo Yigalechu, Ufera, Lo Yishalechu. Pasuk Yecheskel is talking about the halachas of a Kohen, and the Navi describes how they're not allowed to grow their hair pera, meaning it's not allowed to go wild. Ksom yichsemu es rosheihem. They should trim their hair. The olive pera pera mi nazir. Now, the word pera means to have their hair grow long, and we learn it from nazir. And uksiv hacha ufera lo yishalechu. And it says that they're not allowed to let their hair grow long. Uksiv hasam gidal peres se'ar rasho. On the other hand, the nazir is specifically supposed to allow his hair to grow long. Malahalam shoshim afkan shoshim. Now, when it comes to a nazir, we know that the minimum amount of time to be a nazir is 30 days. And so by a nazir, hair growth, meaning when your hair is growing and getting, quote-unquote, too long, that's 30 days. So for the Kohen, who is prohibited from allowing that to happen, so that means that he has to cut his hair within every 30 days. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah that a Stam Nazir is for 30 days. How do we know that? Amar Rav Masna, Amar Kra, Kodesh Yiyeh Begamashia Talsin Havu. That the Pasuk describing the Nazir as a Kodesh Yiyeh, he has to be holy, and the word Yiyeh in Gamashia is 30 days. Off the top of my head, I cannot think of another halacha that's learned from Gematria. We learn a lot of nice ideas from Gematria, and you could certainly make a lot of connections in Gematria, but to learn a bona fide halacha, so I cannot think off the top of my head of another time where we have a Gematria teaching us a halacha. So the Gemara says that maybe what the Pasuk Yecheskel means is that they shouldn't grow their hair at all, meaning get haircuts regularly. Even with more frequency than every 30 days. So Amrlei Iksiv Lo Yishalechu Pera Kedekamart. So if the pasuk in the Navi would have described that they're not allowed to let their hair grow long, so fine. Hashad Iksiv Ufera. So the Gemara says, but since the wording of the pasuk in the Navi is Upera, so the Gemara describes Pera Lehave shluchi lo lishlachu. So it can get to the point of pera, but beyond that point it can't get. So we achi ad nanami. So fine. So now we've established that a kohen can allow his hair to grow for 30 days, but no more than 30 days, and then he has to get a haircut. So the Gemara wants to know, so nowadays as well, so why don't we say the same thing is true regarding a kohen? Meaning, obviously we don't have the base of mikdash, but still, shouldn't a kohen be in a position of being ready so that in the event that the Beis HaMikdash is built, b'mehera v'yameinu, so then he'll be prepared to he'll be prepared to do the avoda right away. And the Gemara says, "Domi yediayin, ma'yam b'zman bia hida aser, shlo b'zman bia sharei, afir rosh b'zman bia aser, shlo b'zman bia sharei." Now, when it comes to drinking of wine, you know, Cohen, if he's off duty, so he can drink. If he's on duty, he can't drink. So why do we say the same thing regarding the haircut? V'yayin shlo b'zman bia sharei, v'atanya. The Gemara says, well, why don't we consider the following? Rabbi Omer, Omer ani kohenim asur l'shtos yayin la'olam. So Rabbi's of the opinion that nowadays I think no kohen should be drinking wine. In other words, nowadays the kohanim are not sure which mishmar they belong to, and even if they know which mishmar they belong to, they may not know which Beis Av they belong to. Beis Av is the way that the week is broken up, where of the 7 days of the week, each Mishmar is broken up into six Bate Avos, so that each one is going to be working one of the days. On Shabbos, they're all going to go into the Beis of Mikdash. But anyway, you don't know which Mishmar it is, and even if you do, you don't know which Beis Av you belong to. So Rabbi says, basically, every Kohen has to be on alert in the event that they should be able to work in the base of Mikdash. Ava ma esesh takanaso kilkolaso. But Rabbi says, but when all said and done, as a result of the churban base of Mikdash, and everything is mixed up and mixed together, so as a result of that, Rabbi's of the opinion that kohanim can drink wine nowadays. Ve'am Rabbi kaman shasi kane chamra idna k'Rabbi. And Abai says nowadays kohanim can drink wine, meaning even though in principle they should be on alert, but because the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, because we don't know which Kohanim go where, so therefore Rebbe allowed for the Kohanim nowadays to drink wine. Mechlal de Rabban Nasri. Now that's Rebbe's position, which means that contrary to Rebbe's position, the Chachamim say that no, even Mizmanazeh, even nowadays, Kohanim should be on high alert and be ready to be serving in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore not drinking any wine. So the Gemara says, so if that's true, so now if the Chachamim prohibit the Kohanim from drinking wine nowadays, even nowadays, so shouldn't they say the same thing regarding haircuts? That Kohanim should be always in need of a haircut, at least within every 30 days, a Kohen should be getting a haircut? Gemara goes on to explain. So the Gemara says, just like I need a Kohen to be ready to do the avoda and therefore not drink, so shouldn't I also need a kohen to be ready to do the avoda and therefore always have a haircut, have his hair groomed? So hacha esha de misaper va'ayol. So the Gemara says, yeah, but when it comes to a haircut, so let's say the Beis HaMikdash is built speedily in our day. So fine, so the kohen for sure will have some time to get a haircut before doing the avoda. So the Gemara says, hasanam esha de nine port of ayol. Damar of derech mil v'shena kol shu mafigin esayin. So, I'm sorry, damar of acha. Derech mil v'shena kol shu mafigin esayin. So the Gemara says, well, the same thing is true regarding if a kohen's a little bit intoxicated, so you take a nap, you take a little walk, or maybe you do both, and wouldn't that sober you up? So the Gemara says, "V'lavit marla amar Rav Nachman amar Rav Baravulo shano l'shashasa kadei revius." That's only if you drank a revius of a yosem echte revius. But if you drink more than a revius, koshekein de derech terasa v'shena mishkarto. So the Gemara says, taking a walk or even taking a little nap is not going to help you if you are significantly drunk. So the Gemara says that we could make a very simple distinction between haircuts and drinking, and that in a haircut, so if the Kohen's hair is long and the base of Mikdash is built, so the remedy can be tended to right away. On the other hand, when it comes to if a Kohen is drunk, so he won't be able to remedy himself that quickly in order to serve in the base of Mikdash. The Gemara is going to give another way to make a distinction between the two. Rav Ashi Amar Shesuyan Demachli Avoda, when it comes to drinking, where the Avoda will become defiled, will become profaned. Gazru Bei Rabbanan. Apri Rosh Lamachli Avoda Lo Gazru Bu Rabbanan. So, but when it comes to a Kohen having long hair, if he does the avoda in that state, it will not be mechal the avoda, will not profane the avoda. The Gemara goes on to explain. Meisvei. The Elu Shebimisa. The Gemara over here describes which coin is subject to the death of Misa Bidei Shemaim. Perosh Shesui Yain. Any coin that does the Avoda while being either intoxicated or in need of a haircut. Bishlam Shesui Yain. Dichsiv Yain Vishachar. Al Teishtata Vanecha. And then the Pasuk goes on to say, Velo Samusu. And the reason why a coin should not be drunk is because if he's drunk, he'll die. Which means that the Torah spells out that a coin who's drunk and does the Avoda is subject to Misa B'dei Shamayim, Ela Pruish Menalam. But how do I know that the same is true regarding a Kohen who is in need of a haircut? Deit Kishu So Yalne Puri Rosh Ksiv Rosham Lo Yigalechu Fer Lo Yishalechu. So Uksiv Yain Lo Yishtu. So the Gemara has a hekesh between haircuts and wine. So Mash Yisui Yain Misa Puri Rosh Misa. So the Brisa therefore says, so therefore the punishment is going to be the same for both. And if the punishment is going to be the same for both, so then can we not now make a very simple suggestion, which is umina? So using the hekesh, let's also now arrive at the final conclusion. So just like when a kohen is doing the avoda while drunk, it is mechal the avoda, meaning it profanes the avoda is no longer any good. Same thing is true if a kohen is doing the avoda while having while in need of a haircut. So Kasha, the Gemara says this is in fact difficult, and so this suggestion of Ravashi seems to be not defensible. Amalei Ravina Ravashi Hai Adalo Asi Cheskom Anamra. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Let's think this through. This idea that a kohen needs a haircut every 30 days is based on Psukim in the Navi. So the Gemara says, now prior to that, did we know these halachas? L'tameich. The Gemara says, Hadamer of Chisa Davar Zemi Taras Moshe Ravina Lamanu Ashi Ba Yecheskov Lamanu Vechol Ben Echar Arel Lev Arel Basar Lo Yavo Mikdashi Adalo Ba Yecheskom Man Amra. Now this idea that if you have a kohen who's an Arel, who is not circumcised, either he's physically not circumcised or a real lev, which means that he's a kofir. So such a kohen is not allowed to serve in the Beis Hamikdash. Now, nowhere does it say that in Chumash. So ad lo ba yecheskel manamra ela gemar gemirula vas yecheskel vas machakra. So the Gemara says that really that is what's called halacha Moshe Mesinai, and then when yecheskel comes along, so yecheskel just simply codifies it, so to say, he puts it down in the Navi, but we knew that all along through Halacha Moshe Mesinai. Hachanami Gamar Gamirla Vas Yecheska Vas Machakra. So the same thing can be said over here regarding the Kohen and his grooming. The idea that a Kohen is not allowed to allow his hair to grow long. So really it's based on Halacha Moshe Mesinai, and as far as Yecheskel putting it down, so it's he's putting down what is really already Halacha Moshe Mesinai. Now in the parentheses, the next words are V'chi Gemir Halacha L'misa L'achu L'avod L'gemiri. In parentheses now, what the Gemara is doing is giving a defense in the support of Rav Ashi. Meaning previously we thought it was a Hekesh, and if it's a Hekesh, so then what's true for one is going to be true by the other. And if there is going to be a chil avoda for one, there'll be chil avoda for the other. And if there's going to be misa for one, there's going to be misa for the other. And so what we struggled with earlier is we didn't see what the difference was between one and the other. And so why nowadays would there be a distinction between a kohen who has long hair versus a kohen who's drunk? But now the Gemara points out, I mean, this is what the parenthesis is telling us. But now what the Gemara points out is not based on Hekesh, it's based on Halacha Moshe Mesinai. So these two halachas do not necessarily go hand in hand. Finishing up the parak. Regarding the Kohen, the Pasuk and the Navi describes, Yecheskel describes how his head should be trimmed. What does that mean? Tana Kamin Tasporos Lulinas. So the Gemara says, gets a very special haircut. So the Gemara says, "My tisparis lu la yanais." So the Gemara says, "Can you give me a better description of what that means?" I'm Rabbi Yehuda Mashmuel. Tisparta yichida. It's very, very unique. Heichidami amaravashi rosho shalze betzadikar shalze. The tip of one hair is already by the root of the other hair, so it's a very specific type of haircut. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah in the third parak. Sorry, the Gemara in Sukkah in the third parak describes that there are some who love him who look like this as well. The Sinei Har Barzel, mentioned the first Mishnah of the third parak of Sukkah, disguised Rosh Hashanah because Tzadi Kar Shalzeh. The tip of one hits the base of the other. So over here, the Gemara describes it as well. Shalu Ez Rabbi, Ezu Tasparsho Kohen Gadol. What is a haircut of the Kohen Gadol? Amlam Su Urumi Tasparsho Ben Al Asha. So he says, well, go look at the haircut of Ben Al Asha. He was, Rashi points out, the son-in-law of Rabbi. and he spent a lot of money in order to learn the, how to do the tzarka. Tanya Rabbi Omer, La Chinam Pizer Ben Elisha Esma Usav Ela Kedei Laharis Bo Tasper Shal Kohen Gadol. My son-in-law did not waste a lot of his money on this tzarka, but in other words, it wasn't for no reason. He wanted to show other people what this haircut looked like, and he wanted to show people what exactly the Kohen Gadol looked like when, in fact, he received this very special type of haircut. Akan, that is the end of the second parak. Tomorrow, we start parak Shlishi.